Nadia, thank you very much for a very good presentation. Daniel, can I invite you to the podium?
Well, thank you very much to the National Council on U.S.-Arab Relations for inviting me to join you at this panel, and to Peter for those introductory comments. The reason you wouldn't have seen me here earlier than a couple of years ago, Peter, is very much related to something that Nadia referred to. In my previous capacity, and I'm not ruling it out as a future one either, I was involved in the Israeli government, and I was actually at those Taba negotiations as an Israeli negotiator working in the PM's office that Nadia referred to, and I would very much second what Nadia said about how close we were at Taba. And I very much come to this question from something else that you said, Nadia, because I agree with you, Israel is stuck. And so for me, it's a burning issue how, for Israel, one gets out of this predicament. Let me start by saying that the paradigm we're operating in of the two-state solution for 20 years since the PNC declaration at Algiers in 1988, the last 15 years, and it was the 15th anniversary, I don't think we were celebrating it, last month of the Oslo Agreement, I think it's not too alarmist to say that paradigm of a two-state solution may well pass its sell-by date during the term of the next U.S. president, especially if that's a two-term presidency. I really don't think that is excessively alarmist to make that claim, partly because of the situation on the ground that you can see on that OCHA website that was referred to, but also because of what's going on up here. As people lose more belief, more hope on both sides, but I think particularly on the Palestinian side, that there can be a two-state solution. And Nadia referred to the increasing interest, intellectual and activist and otherwise, on the Palestinian side of a one-state solution. Some would say, well, that's not so terrible. I have several reasons for thinking it's actually is rather a terrible thing. Principally, from an analyst's perspective, not from my own personal perspective, but from an analyst's perspective, I'm not sure there are alternatives out there. There is no traction for a one-state solution in Israel. There, I think, is very little traction for a Jordanian option in Jordan. And I think that the idea that Israel would do a further unilateral withdrawal that would fall short of the kind of dignity that a viable two-state solution needs to accord also doesn't offer us a way out. For Israel, as Nadia said, this challenge goes to the heart of whether Israel can, in the future, continue to be a state that is democratic and has a Jewish character. For the Palestinians, I'd argue, well, I don't like to talk about hierarchies of suffering. I do think that in the absence of a two-state solution and nothing else emerging on the horizon that can be implemented, for the Palestinians, I think that suggests a long time of further suffering, which is why I believe, as you suggested, Hamas is actually moving closer to accepting the reality of a potential two-state solution. And, of course, it's the Fatah position. And even and I'd really recommend people to read this, even a group like the Palestine Study Group, which was an informal effort of academics from inside the territories, Palestinian Israelis and Palestinians from the diaspora, who came together and set out a number of alternatives for a Palestinian strategy moving forward. Their end message was, don't force us to go down the one-state route. It's not going to be that great for us either. It was almost a cri de cœur to Israel, seize the two-state option while it still exists. For the Arab world, if I may in this esteemed forum suggest, that I think this is regionally destabilizing and embarrassing for the Arab states, especially those allied with the US. For many years, we were all told it's actually rather convenient for the Arab states because it's a nice excuse to not make domestic reforms. I'm not sure that was ever true. I think to the extent to which it might have been, I don't think that's where we are today. I don't think it's comfortable to have Hassan Nasrallah and President Ahmadinejad of Iran speak above the heads of Arab rulers to the Arab street, saying, wait a minute, if you're so cozy with the Americans, why are they still facilitating what's going on with the Palestinians? And I think Nadia more than effectively addressed why this is a US interest which is also rather important in this setting. It fuels anti-Americanism, the unresolved conflict. It undermines America's allies. It's a recruitment tool driving extremism. It saps American credibility, and it's a political and PR gift to the Iranian regime. So what to do? The outgoing Bush administration engaged belatedly after 7 years on the Israeli-Palestinian issue at Annapolis. Now we have a process, an Annapolis process. And the obvious thing for an incoming administration would be to say, wow, that's great. We've got a process that we can continue with. We can keep moving forward on this. We'll do it with more enthusiasm. We'll do it on day one, not year seven, unlike the other guys. We'll do it with energy. Maybe we'll have a new envoy. We've got a process that we can continue with. I would strongly lend my voice to what Nadia said in urging caution against taking such an approach. This process is not working. Annapolis is repeating the failures of Oslo. And I would argue not because of the individuals concerned. These aren't shortcomings on the part necessarily of Secretary Rice or Assistant Secretary Welch or Security Envoy Dayton or the Quartet. I think there are structural flaws in this process, and let me quickly point out three of them. Number one, I very much doubt that resolving the outstanding Israeli-Palestinian issues can be done bilaterally, both because we're down to the core questions and because of the natures of the leaderships on both sides at this stage. Number two, I don't believe we can construct a stable two-state solution and a Palestinian state on the edifice of a divided Palestinian house. As Nadia said, a weakened Palestinian leadership and a divided Palestinian polity is actually a net negative for anyone who's seriously interested in having a two-state solution. You have a problematic address, you have problematic legitimacy, and you have problematic carrying capacity. And that's not just an Israeli excuse. For some it is, but it's a reality, even if many of us help create that reality. Thirdly, and perhaps most importantly, I would strongly argue that you cannot, it's a complicated sentence, I apologize in advance, that you cannot incubate Palestinian statehood in the laboratory of a hostile foreign occupation, especially one that includes a civilian settler population that demands from its military, from the IDF, not only that it will continue to grow and expand, but that it will have freedom of movement. Freedom of movement for the settlers directly contradicts the capacity to have freedom of movement for the Palestinian population of the West Bank, because the IDF is duty-bound to protect them. The expectation that you can birth a beautifully formed Palestinian state under these conditions is a totally unrealistic expectation. And so our efforts at trying to do Palestinian economic development, at trying to do PA institution building, at trying to do PA security sector development, trying to do all those things under these conditions have failed and failed again, and not because we're not smart in terms of how we try to do it. It's because we're not smart in even attempting it, because it can't be done, would be my argument. That's the lesson. There are some successes. We get excited about Jenin on the security side, about Bethlehem as an investors conference. It's not sustainable. And yes, you address the political conditions. And let me just say one sentence about one of those aspects, what many people to consider to be the most important, and that for me as an Israeli very much matters, which is security. You build a Palestinian security service, a force. The dilemma that that force very quickly faces under these conditions is, can we protect our own people against the IDF and against the settlers? Or are we essentially a subcontractor for the Israelis, and therefore we're condemned as illegitimate by our own people? You can manage that tension for a month, 2 months, 3 months, but not over time. And eventually the American-trained forces and the internationally funded weaponry will be turned against Israel and Israelis. So let me suggest a different approach, and to quickly sketch four elements And some of them will dovetail what you already heard. Four elements of this different approach. Number one, go comprehensive and regional. The Arab Peace Initiative has been dramatically underutilized. It's almost shameful the extent to which that wasn't used either when it was issued in 2002 or reissued in 2007. And it's fascinating. You now have Israel's leadership from President Shimon Peres, Defense Minister Barak, Foreign Minister Livni, all talking about the Arab Peace Initiative. Now, I'm not saying that we should turn this initiative around and say, okay, first of all, you front load. Let's have diplomatic relations. Let's have lots of nice upfront things. No. I think you need the comprehensive solution in order for these other things to kick in. But let's begin to flesh them out. Let's begin to flesh out what it might look like, how tangible it could be. Which means we need greater Arab involvement, which means you need an Israeli-Syrian track, when appropriate, an Israeli-Lebanese track, alongside an Israeli-Palestinian track, and a track with the Arab League to do the Arab Peace Initiative. Secondly, the US and perhaps the Quartet needs to be ready to make bridging proposals on the specifics of closing a deal and actively to promote those ideas, especially on the Israeli-Palestinian track, perhaps on the Syrian track. Thirdly, do not veto, but rather encourage Palestinian national reconciliation. And it should be an Arab mediation effort that is not exclusively Egyptian and that has Western support. Especially if you have this comprehensive effort, Hamas will be operating within a new regional map. And one should make reasonable demands. Not the three conditions, but reasonable demands that first and foremost begin with the violence issue of Hamas. Fourthly and finally, we need to come up with an answer to this question of, as Israel withdraws, what do you do about the governance and security vacuum? And my argument is, you have to come up with an answer to that question that isn't predicated on Palestinian proof of performance while under Israeli occupation. And I think that requires an international partnership with the Palestinians. That will probably require international security forces taking the place of the IDF. That will probably require international assistance with Palestinian governance in order to incubate Palestinian statehood in a more healthy environment. Those would be my suggestions. Let me close by making two final comments. First of all, Israeli elections, which Nadia touched on. Right now in the polls, it's a dead tie. It seems that Israelis will go to the polls on February the 10th. If you do get a Livni-led, Kadima-led government, I think all of the above applies, and that government will need sufficient assistance if it's going to be carried over the finishing line of a comprehensive peace. If Netanyahu is prime minister, what I would urge this forum to remember is we've been there before. Netanyahu signed the Hebron and Y agreements. They didn't get us very far. But they made the internal tension of him managing his own government very difficult. And of course, he had a back channel with Syria. So do not give up on a Netanyahu premiership a priori, but also don't pretend that the idea that you can do a flourishing Palestinian economy without touching the politics, which is what he is suggesting, is something that is really worth carrying forward. And a final thing that I really feel I have to say today. And I do just want to make one comment about the story that is developing, and you may all have read about Rashid Khalidi. And the event that took place 5 years ago that was reported in the LA Times with Senator Obama and the very bizarre comment made by Senator McCain that it would be like him meeting with a neo-Nazi. Let me say this. I believe that American support for Israel is a very positive thing. I'm proud that that support exists. As an Israeli, I'm very, very sympathetic and pleased that we have that support. It's a great achievement. But that cannot be distorted to become the demonization of Palestinians and of decent people like Rashid Khalidi. And let me tell you, it does Israel absolutely no favors. Israel's been talking to the PLO for 15 years, for heaven's sake. Israel has a ceasefire with Hamas. A Palestinian friend of mine, Mustafa Barghouti, when he addresses Israeli and Jewish audiences, likes to say that you don't only need to liberate the Palestinian people from Israeli occupation, but you need to liberate Israel from the occupation, because only with that way will you be able to heal Israel. And after what's happened with Khaledi, I would say that that same liberation may well apply to the discourse here in the United States. Thank you.